Ugh, spam calls. Sound familiar? Introducing Line 2. Get a second phone number right on your existing phone. Imagine discounts, appointments, online forms. Handle it all without giving out your personal number. It's like having a secret weapon against spam. And when those unwanted calls sneak through, boom, blocked. No more interruptions, no more stress. Stay connected, stay protected. Keep your main number safe and out of harm's way. Ready to take back your phone? Visit line2.com/audio or download Line 2 in the App Store today.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to the Three Down Nation podcast. And regardless of what AI thinks, it has not been discontinued, fellas. It might be the first time that we can say something is fake news. Of course, John Hodge and JC Abbott along for the Three Down Nation podcast after a little bit of a break. No discontinuation. Not here. Just a break.
Yeah, I can't remember what I Googled the other day, but it's now that when you Google something, there's an AI-generated thing at the top of the page that tries to inform you about what you've Googled. And I Googled something about the draft. I might have just Googled my mock draft. And it listed the players, and some of them weren't even real players. Some of them were players from previous year's drafts. So I know there's a lot of talk about AI displacing workers, and I'll just put it this way. Right now, I have never once been less scared about being replaced as a reporter by AI, because AI, from my experience as it relates to Three Down Nation, the CFL, is hot trash. Like hot, hot, steaming, disgusting, 40-degree weather, Humidex trash.
Ew. I completely agree with you, Hodge, but my question is, was that mock draft any worse than some of the other ones that we see out there on the market this time of year? Because some of those have some wild takes in them.
I'm not touching that with a 10-foot pole, my friend.
Regardless what AI says, fellas, the Three Down Nation podcast is back. Lots to get to, and we start with the NFL and CFL drafts.
Bo Levi Mitchell musing about riding off into the sunset.
Tyrell Ford turning down NFL teams to sign in Edmonton.
Trevor Harris's potential future in the broadcast booth.
High expectations for Montreal receivers.
And some surprising recent retirements. But first, new CFL commissioner Stuart Johnston addressed the media for the first time on Thursday at Hotel X in downtown Toronto, Laying out a measured vision for the league in sharp contrast to his predecessor. Dunk, you were in attendance for the introductory press conference and spoke to the commissioner one-on-one afterwards. What were your biggest takeaways?
That word measured has really resonated with me upon a short reflection on his press conference. Let it show for the record, fellas, that 3downnation.com had the first question in the Stuart Johnston era. And we also had a one-on-one with him that is on the podcast feeds, wherever you get your podcasts, if you want to listen to it. Also, we have articles up at the site breaking down his introductory press conference, talking about him not necessarily focusing on expansion, and also the one-on-one that I did with him that focuses on the process that led to him becoming the 15th CFL commissioner. So there's lots of goods there. But as for my takeaways, it was that word that you mentioned, measured. There were no grandiose statements. And I want to stay away from comparing him to Randy Ambrosi, but I feel like it's recency bias and it's going to happen. So, you know, when Randy Ambrosi took over, he talked about doubling league revenue. Well, Stuart Johnston didn't say anything even close to that. He spoke about wanting to go on a listening tour for 100 days. And he noted that when he goes on that tour and he's listening and then asking some questions, he doesn't necessarily want to lead by saying, well, what are the issues in the league? He wants to understand what's working well, because he feels like that can lead to an entirely different conversation when you come at it from that, let's say, glass half full approach instead of glass half empty. And then you can transition from, what's working really well into what needs to get better. I liked the fact in particular that he, at least in my estimation, did his best to answer questions. And if he felt like he didn't want to give you an answer or couldn't give you an answer, for example, I asked him, how long is his contract as CFL commissioner? And he said he wasn't going to divulge the exact length, but he said it was a long-term agreement where he felt like he could accomplish the goals that he presented to the Board of Governors. And there wasn't anything else to it. It was very straightforward. It was businesslike. And I think this is something that the CFL could use overall. So my general takeaway from the press conference, watching him interact with different people in the room, and then having that one-on-one time with him, is that he wants to be judged and he's going to just go to work. And that's what he wants you to judge him on, what he actually does. So I think you check the box and say, this is a great start from a PR perspective for Stuart Johnston.
I agree with all that. I am going to compare Stuart Johnston and Randy Ambrosi because I literally did that in the title of the article that I wrote this morning. So it would be dishonest if I were
Ambrosi, you called him.
Well, yeah, it would be dishonest for me to do anything but that. So yes, I'm comparing them, and I think it's reasonable because in the last decade, only two people have been commissioner of the CFL. There's a tail end of the very short Jeffrey Orridge era in there. But when Randy Ambrosi came in, I think there was a lot of positive momentum, right? Jeffrey Orridge is not popular. Randy Ambrosi was a former player, right? I think there was a certain relaxed vibe that Randy had at the start of his tenure that had completely dissipated by the end of his tenure, right? He went on Randy's road trip and he talked to fans and he would walk around wearing blue jeans, sipping a beer. And I think that resonated with CFL fans. And something that struck me was Stuart Johnston talking about how he wants to go on his 100 day of listening. That's what he called it. He wants to spend the next 100 days crossing the country, talking to, you know, members of the Board of Governors, team presidents, GMs, coaches, players, and listening and learning. And I think that's all positive. I also thought he was wise to be measured and not make outlandish projections about three down football being played in Timbuktu, or he's going to double league revenues. That being said, the point I'm trying to illustrate is when Randy Ambrosi firstly came in, there was a lot of optimism. So I give Stuart Johnston full credit, and I'm not suggesting that Randy Ambrosi was a terrible commissioner. That would be unfair. I thought he was, given the circumstances that he had with a global pandemic and multiple ownership crises, most of which were not his fault, I thought he did passably, I suppose. C minus, we'll call it. Stuart Johnston, I thought, good first day, but this is day one, right? If he wants to be the commissioner of this league for a long time, and I thought you did a great job of asking those important questions. No, Stuart Johnston did not give us a full term of his contract, but he said it's long enough to get done what he wants to get done. I think if you're the CFL, you optimally want this to be a 10-year, 12-year, 15-year relationship. He's only 54 years old. Presumably, Stuart Johnston could do this gig for a long time. Heck, Gary Bettman is probably going to be the NHL's commissioner in 2065, right? And he'll do it as a cryogenically frozen robot if he has to, right? So if Stuart Johnston at the age of 54 taking this job can have this position for the next 15 or 20 years, I think that would be attractive. Today is just day one. I thought he did a good job. I thought that it was interesting that he didn't entirely close the book on CFL expansion, but that would have been low-hanging fruit for him to say, I'm really excited about expansion. Let's see where it goes. Instead, he said, that's not a priority for me. Yeah, of course, if an amazing owner comes by and wants to get a 10th team, we'd pursue it. But he's focused on 9 teams, right? That was an easy win he could have had, was to tell the fans what they want to hear, even though necessarily a 10th team is not super realistic right now. He didn't do that. He was measured. He stuck to things that I think he can realistically deliver and things that he's confident he can deliver. And I think that's a good first start. But it's just a start. Today's day one. I'm interested in day two, day three, and of course, beyond.
Yeah, the excitement here with Johnston taking over as commissioner and his first press conference is completely different than the excitement when Ambrosi took over, because that was largely motivated by A, his affinity for the league in general and his attachment to it, but also the grandiose things he was saying and the promises he was making, right? He presented a grand vision for the CFL that he ultimately failed to deliver, and that was his biggest weakness as a commissioner. I thought what Johnston did there today was show competence. And I think it's not dissimilar from the recent political changes we've had in this country, in that, you know, we don't know what this guy is going to do as CFL commissioner. We don't necessarily know whether we're going to agree with his policies or not. But the second he took the stage, you felt competent or confident that he was competent and sharp and intelligent enough to do this job and had a grasp of what he was stepping into. And I think, not to say Ambrosi wasn't an intelligent guy, because he was, and a very successful businessman in his own right, but the way he presented himself publicly, certainly in these media availabilities, the promises he couldn't keep, the times that he stepped over his own feet and tripped over his own words, those really hurt him. You didn't see any of that from Johnston today.
Stuart Johnston spoke very well, and among some casual conversation, you know, I was asking him how come he didn't have a white suit on or a Game of Thrones type getup as he's done in the Bell Media or TSN up fronts. And he's like, you know, I didn't think that was probably the right tone. And he did admit that he's used to giving speeches, but usually when the questions are being asked, he's among his TSN colleagues, for lack of a better term, you know, watching them go about their business, that was different for him to be put on the spot and be asked questions, you know, during the press conference, after there was a scrum, and then the one-on-one that he had with TSN, and then obviously the one-on-one that he had with Three Down Nation as well. But like, there was a genuine, I felt like, honesty. And, you know, let's look at his resume, guys, because this is somebody who, if he had decided to look elsewhere for work, let's say outside Bell Media or TSN, would be coveted. Now, you do a little bit of research and talk to some people about Randy Ambrosi and his business exploits. And I'm not saying he wasn't successful, but I don't think he would have been coveted as much as Johnston, if we're going to kind of compare the two, even though I said I wasn't going to do that. So I'm going back on my word. Sorry about that. I think we can look at Johnston and say that this is a great person to lead the league, and there's a lot of potential there. And I think that's kind of how he left everything after his first day in his introductory press conference. There's a lot of growth in the league, he believes. He also said flat out and told us that he believes it's realistic for all nine franchises to become profitable. But then he added some valuable context to that and said, you know, profitability for each team isn't just the single measure of a successful league. He actually said, quote, "There are many, many teams in major pro sports leagues across North America and the world that either have no profitability or little profitability, but their franchise values are increasing. That's an indicator of health," close quote. And we did have Randy Ambrosi on the record at Grey Cup during his State of the League address admit that franchise values were flat. Now, Johnston is bullish, and he believes that's a sign of growth. So let's see what he can do. But I like the fact that he didn't come out and say, "I'm going to double league revenues," or "I'm going to grow league revenues to heights that you've never seen before." And then the question that I feel like is very topical around the CFL right now about the broadcast rights, I felt like he answered in an intriguing way when talking about it. And directly to me, he said, like, if you have a long-term partner — he didn't name TSN, but that's who he was talking about — in TSN and Bell Media, that you approach them first, but he wants the CFL games and highlights to be available, you know, across social media. I believe he referenced TikTok and Instagram. I even made a joke about 3DNation.com being able to clip out highlights and, you know, putting it on our social media feeds. And it didn't seem like that would be an issue. So maybe we'll have to check that one out, fellas. But as a whole, I really feel like this is an intriguing hire with upside. Does he have to deliver? Yes. And it's new in the early days and people are feeling all nice and it's a shiny new thing. So I think that partly comes with the territory. But I am really interested to see what Stuart Johnston can do here. I think there is a lot of upside with him in that role. And to me, it's a role that he didn't have to take, right? I'm sure he was comfortable at TSN, making a lot of money. He had just got a new promotion, essentially, for lack of a better term, at Bell Media, overseeing a significant portfolio. As this potential role for commissioner came across his plate. So let's just remember that and not think about, you know, him not being a former player, because you don't just have to be a former player to be successful, you know, as a businessman or as a commissioner. It might help, as I think it did a little bit for Randy Ambrosi, but the Players Association would tell you that, you know, he wasn't necessarily treating them like a partner. And I think that Johnston understands that. He said during his press conference that the CFL players are the stars of the league. I asked him directly if he believes there are superstars in the league. He said 100%. So I think he realizes the importance of having those stars and helping them build. Like, he referenced Brady Oliveira, who obviously won the MLP and MLC awards last year and is far and away the highest paid running back in the league, and who by our own research, it seems like, has the largest following on Instagram among any active CFL player. And Stuart Johnston said, absolutely, he is a CFL superstar, but also referenced the fact that they need to help grow those superstars.
I also thought that one of the things Johnston did well was with his messaging, right? The details that were on point. Like, for instance, a big controversy back in 2021, which our sharpest followers, I'm sure, will remember, was when then Edmonton Elks Board of Directors Chairman of the Board of Directors, Ian Murray, said that Edmonton's team demographics were, quote, brutal, and described them as, quote, disproportionately old, male, and white, which isn't representative of our community, which a lot of people felt very turned off by. I think I'm comfortable saying that maybe the old white guys who heard that were a little overly sensitive by being upset and offended by that. But I also agree that Murray, as the main messenger, right, the one who as the chair of the board is speaking on behalf of the club. And by the way, these comments were made after they just fired the president, GM, and head coach in one fell swoop. So he literally was the only person who at that point could speak on behalf of the team. He probably could have voiced that a little bit better. And Stuart Johnston did exactly that. He still honored the old-time CFL fans, the ones who fill a lot of seats in stadiums across this country. Heck, he was talking about Jerry Organ running for a first down on a fake punt in the 1976 Grey Cup. It doesn't get much more hardcore old school CFL fan than that. But he also talked about the importance of connecting with young Canadians, right? With connecting with new Canadians, diverse Canadians, which I take as code to mean Canadians who weren't born in Canada or Canadians who aren't white, right? Canadians who have different and more diverse ethnic and cultural backgrounds, which, by the way, is exactly what Murray was trying to say. I think Johnston just said it in a lot better way. And by the way, he's also right. Yes, we need new Canadians. We need people who weren't born in Canada but are Canadian to fall in love with this league, just like many of our uncles and fathers did. I also, when you think diversity, think of women. I think the research has shown that CFL popularity and interest has exploded among women in the last generation. I think young women in this country are now more likely to be CFL fans than young men, as more young men have flocked to the NFL. But I also know the research, and I'm quoting from Angus Reid, is several years old. So it's probably for the best if that gets updated at some point. Hopefully they do another study. But the point I'm making is that messaging was on point, right? It's possible to do two things simultaneously. They're not mutually exclusive. You can absolutely honor the past and the history and the existing fan base while also working to go digital, go new age, and attract new people. Those are not two completely impossible things to do simultaneously. I thought Johnson was smart to mention it. He, yes, trumpeted all the successes in the CFL, the positive momentum, but I also didn't think he tried to apologize or cover any of the warts that are undeniably a part of the CFL. So I thought the messaging was on point. I thought it was smart. And I thought that he delivered it in an articulate way. He seemed very comfortable, particularly in the one-on-one you did, Dunk. I thought you did a great job of that. It's on the podcast feed, as Justin mentioned. So I'm bullish on this. It's only day one, but I'm bullish on Stuart Johnson, just as he is on the CFL.
In that same vein, Hodge, I was impressed when he was discussing the younger demographics and the need to attract that to the CFL, that he brought up flag football and that aspect of the game as well, and how that sport is growing and going to be in the Olympics, because we've talked about it ad nauseum on this podcast that the CFL has not done enough to get its name out there in that space and get its logos on team uniforms and sponsor things in flag football, whereas the NFL has been a global leader in having flag football leagues with its branding. He didn't make any promises on that front, but I thought it was intriguing that he brought that up of his own accord in his introductory press conference. And I think there could be some potential developments there in the future based on the way he seems to be targeting that particular demographic.
You bring up flag football, and it makes me think, fellas. I believe it was last week, I was out on a high school field in Etobicoke, and randomly I see the Grey Cup MVP Nick Arbuckle out there coaching high school quarterbacks in a few grades down. And then, you know, someone sort of, let's say, within my close circle, their son is signed up to play flag football in the GTA, the Greater Toronto Area. And that flag league, fellas, is called, I believe it's the Toronto Flag Football League. And the Argos are all over it. The Argos logo is literally on the flags, on the jerseys, on the football. The double blue is everywhere. And I think we talk about, you know, what the CFL isn't doing. And then something like this pops up in front of my face, and I say, isn't doing in reference to flag football. And then something like this pops up, and I see, okay, perhaps the league is doing more than we realize. So I thought it was really intriguing from the sense that Stuart Johnston believes that that could be a major factor for the CFL to, you know, attract fans and have the next generation playing football. And whether or not you take it anywhere past potentially playing it even for one season or multiple years or high school or university, and if you just stick to flag football, if it's touch football, if you're playing it at some point, you're going to develop that passion, you know, to follow the game and want to go check a game out. So I think that makes a lot of sense. And I'm curious to see how it plays out. 2028 Olympics in Los Angeles, Team Canada. Are there some CFL players on there? You know, I was talking to somebody at the press conference. It felt like Trey Ford could be a very dynamic quarterback in that setting. But like Canada's team could be pretty good going to the LA Olympics in 2028. But more importantly, and to the point that we're talking about, I think that can be a big driver for the Canadian Football League. And Stuart Johnston wants some time to navigate how that's all going to work. But he's not opposed to working as a partner with the NFL to help grow that in Canada. And I think there needs to be some work with Football Canada there as well.
I think that the Bombers are another team that has done a great job with the flag system. They have an entire women and girls flag league at the high school level. They also recently had a kids flag football day at Princess Auto Stadium. My niece and nephew, who are 10 years old, were there. And flag football is, I think, a perfect, really good avenue for my nephew, because I love the kid, but holy crap, he is so scrawny. He does not take after me. He takes after his dad, and he needs to put on some weight if he's ever going to play tackle. But he loves football, is obsessed with it, goes to all the Bomber games. He plays Madden incessantly. I got him a little Patrick Mahomes jersey for his birthday. And from what I was told from my brother in the past month, he hasn't worn it about 4 days. It's been hard to get it in the laundry. That's how much he loves it. So
why did you get him a Zach Kolaris jersey?
Well, because his favorite player is Patrick Mahomes, which is illustrative, right, of the problem that so many, at least by the CFL standpoint, it's a problem, is that so many kids in this country consume so much American content. It's NFL all the time.
Shove it down their throats, Hodge. And
it is his favorite player, so he's being a good uncle.
I'm being a good uncle, exactly. And his parents have done a great job. They're season ticket holders forever in Winnipeg, so like the kid is a CFL fan. There's no question about that. And by the way, I don't think it's bad if Canadian kids like the NFL. There's nothing you can do to control that or stop that, and nor should you to some extent. But what can you do to make them a CFL fan as well, right? It's not mutually exclusive. You're not an NFL fan or a CFL fan. You can love both leagues and be passionate about both leagues. So flag football initiatives like the one you're describing in Toronto, Dunk, like the one that's going on in Winnipeg, I think are positive. And I also think sometimes, maybe as members of the media, we don't do this well enough. I think certainly fans don't do this well enough. Is sometimes they talk about the CFL like it's an entity as one big thing. That's not really how the CFL operates. There's 9 teams that do everything a little bit differently in their markets. And I think from the team perspective, there has always been good work done in the community with visiting schools and outreach and you know, in Manitoba, I know there's a lot of connection to Indigenous communities, specifically up north. That's really neat. I know the Saskatchewan Rough Riders do a lot of things like that, right? Every community is different. But the NFL as a league, there is no doubt, no question, no ifs, ands, or buts, or candy and nuts that they have eaten the CFL's office's lunch when it comes to flag football, mm-hmm. right? If you are a flag football kid in this country, you should not be throwing an NFL football around and wearing NFL merch without at least a CFL football also being at that flag event, right? Or that CFL t-shirt also being at that flag event. Right. Amar Dolman has been very open and honest about wanting kids across the province of British Columbia to be donning BC Lions orange. I think it's a great, awesome, wonderful idea and initiative. But the CFL office, I think, has to get more involved at a national level with the flag football in this country, because as we mentioned, the NFL is all over it and the CFL is playing catch up. Not the clubs. I'm talking about the league office nationwide. The 2025 NFL Draft, speaking of that league, gets underway in Green Bay, Wisconsin on Thursday night. By the way, like, why is this draft in Green Bay, of all places? Like, no hate against the Midwest. I'm a Winnipegger, for goodness sakes. But, like, why is it in Green Bay? Whatever. While no Canadians are expected to hear their names called in round one, receiver Alec Iomanner from Medicine Hat, Alberta, quarterback Curtis Rourke from Oakville, and quarterback Taylor Elgersma from London are all in the mix on day two and day three. Where do you see them going, and are there any other names to be aware of?
Well, I'll start with the first question because I know Dunk is going to go on a long rant about the quarterbacks, but I think it's pretty clear that Alec Iomanner is going to be the first Canadian off the board. Likely in round two is where I see him going. He's not a polished product yet, but he's got all the traits that you want from a number one NFL receiver. He can threaten you vertically. He's big. He's physical. I think he's an even better blocker right now than he is a pass catcher. And this guy has done it against high-level competition with basically nothing around him at Stanford. He went off for 294 yards and 3 touchdowns, matched up one-on-one against Heisman Trophy winner Travis Hunter in 2023. He ate his lunch for that entire game. He could be special if he finds the right fit. As for those other two guys, I think both Rourke and Elgersma are going to be in that round 6, round 7 spot. Rourke could potentially go higher just because teams have a more proven view of him because he played at a high level of competition. But I think the traits are better for Elgarizma, and he's risen through this process. So I wouldn't be surprised if there are teams that have him ahead of Rourke like I do. I hope both get drafted. I think both are certainly going to end up with contracts when everything is said and done. But it's a very exciting time to have two Canadian quarterbacks likely going to get into NFL training camps next year.
I think when you're looking at these two Canadian quarterbacks, the difference that's a real key here, and you guys know how much the NFL cares about the physicals, is the fact that Taylor Elgarizma is healthy and Curtis Rourke is coming off a torn ACL, which he just had surgery on in January.
He's thrown again.
True. And he did play with a broken thumb. So Rourke believes he's going to be ready for training camp. That seems like a super fast timeline, even for guys coming back quickly and more quickly from injuries these days. You know, but the sense, guys, that I'm getting, talking to people who know this stuff and scouts that are looking at these players, is that there's a sexiness around Taylor Elgarizma and his story and his rise. And it seems silly in a sense, but some NFL teams like that. And there are a lot of NFL teams that like looking up the upside, looking at the upside, I should say, and then thinking, hey, if I get him in here, and this is no disrespect to anybody that's coached him, but this is what some NFL teams think. If I get him in here, well, he hasn't really been coached, you know, too much up there in Canada, eh? Imagine what we could do with him. And Taylor Elgarizma has special. We're talking about special arm talent. I don't care if you're Canadian, American, an alien living on Mars or Pluto. That's apparently not even a planet anymore. But he has special arm talent. And I think that's why he has a legitimate shot, as JC alluded to go late in the draft. If he doesn't get selected, he'll have multiple priority undrafted free agent offers. The real key for Elgarizma and Rourke, but I feel like more so for Elgarizma because he's coming from Wilfrid Laurier University. You know, those Americans won't even know where Waterloo is on a map. Probably think there's igloos there and the rest. We'll be going to a place that's actually going to give him time to develop. You know, I think there are multiple situations out there that makes sense. And it also has to be not just the scouts and the general manager that believe in him, but you talk to people who have been around this game for a long time, and they'll say, ultimately, it's going to come down to the coaches. So that's why I look at like a team like the Denver Broncos with Sean Payton, who has made CFL references in the past, who have a franchise quarterback there in Bo Nix. Then they have a backup. I believe it's Jared Stidham, who is pretty well compensated. Am I right, JC? Is Stidham there?
I don't know off the top of my head.
Hodge will be looking it up right away. And then you can put Taylor Elgarizma either in that 3 or 4 spot, potentially the 4 spot, have him on the practice roster developing for a year, perhaps 2, to try to reach that ceiling with NFL coaching. Now, Denver's not the only team that I think could make some sense. You know, the Buffalo Bills are actually one that I think could make a lot of sense because of what they have with Josh Allen as a franchise guy. And you look down their depth chart, and the only team that he was invited to and accepted a top 30 visit from is the Green Bay Packers. I think that could make a lot of sense. Look at what the Packers historically have been able to do developing quarterbacks, allowing them time to cook in the oven before they take it out and serve them at their best. I think that would be an intriguing situation. So when you're thinking about landing spots, especially for Elgarizma, those are the kind I think that would benefit him best to start his NFL career, and we'll see how he can transition from there.
Jared Stidham is on the Denver Broncos. Last month, he signed a 2-year extension worth $12 million, including $7 million guaranteed. Also, Pluto has not been a planet since 2006. So in other late-breaking 19-year-old news, I don't know what else happened in 2006. Well, Winnipeg, that was 2 Winnipeg Grey Cups ago, right? Like, but whatever. Yeah, it's a lot. Granted, I thought it was more recent than 2006, but Google tells me it's 2006 and not the crappy AI garbage.
I was going to say, Google.
Actual Gemini search results that showed up from trusted news sources, 2006. You were probably even in high school in 2006.
I guess I wasn't doing my planet homework.
Your astronomy homework?
Yes.
My planet.
Much better said.
My planet homework. I actually come to think of it. We all, when we were kids, we had to color in. We had to color in the provinces of Canada. I wish we could have colored in the nine planets, now eight planets, but whatever. I digress. I'm going to sound.
Some matches are temporary, but your privacy shouldn't be. With Line 2, you get a second phone line just for dating. No need to share your personal number until you're ready. You can chat, text, and even block numbers, all while keeping things fun and private. It's perfect for online dating, blind dates, or just keeping things light. When you're ready to move on, Line 2 lets you cut ties without any drama. Dating should be fun and carefree. Line 2 keeps it that way. Ready to date on your terms? Visit line2.com/audio or download Line 2 in the App Store today.
A little bit like a hater in this segment. I think that if I were to place the over-under for Canadians who get drafted in this year's draft, I would be putting it at 1.5 and I'd be taking the under. I think Elik Iomanner goes in round 3. I think he has potential wide receiver 1 upside. I think he could be one of the, if he does go in round 3, I think he's going to be one of the best players taken in that round. The two quarterbacks, I just think there's too many warts. And that's not to say that Curtis Rourke and Taylor Elgersma can't both be successful professional quarterbacks. Everybody I've talked to in the CFL seems to think that they are good enough to start in the CFL one day, and they are good enough to get NFL contracts. I don't know if they have enough behind them to have long-term NFL careers, but you never know. You can't rule it out. But between the U Sports aspect with Taylor Elgersma, no real testing numbers, right? He didn't run a 40. He didn't do any of that testing. That historically has been what you need to get drafted in the NFL as a U Sports player. Giovanni Manu out of UBC last year posted unbelievably incredible off the charts testing numbers as an offensive lineman. That is why the Detroit Lions traded up to get him in round 4. Elgersma did not test. And then with Curtis Rourke, you laid out the ACL, the thumb. I think that both of these guys are going to sign as priority free agents, but I don't see them getting drafted. And this isn't a hot take. This is something that gets thrown out every year, but I think it's true. Honestly, that's better, right? Why would you get pigeonholed into taking the team that takes you in round 7 if you could have the choice to go to the market and be a free agent? There's going to be lots of NFL teams interested in signing these two guys.
I think it depends on who the team is, Hodge.
But if I'm Curtis Rourke or if I'm Taylor Elgersma, I would rather, because presumably if a team wants you and is considering taking you in round 7 and they don't, they're going to be one of the first teams beaten on the door to try to sign you as a PFA, right? A priority free agent. So if I'm them, honestly, I'm happier to wait till after the draft and presumably have my pick of the 3, 5, 8, 10, 12, whatever NFL teams are who want to sign me, rather than getting pigeonholed somewhere. Because round 7, the contract is basically going to be the same, right? You might even get more guaranteed money, I think.
It's draft
as
capital,
a top
though.
UDFA.
To me, that's a differentiator.
But it's a 7th-round pick. How many 7th-round picks stick long-term relative to true, like, I'm talking not the low-end UDFAs, but the true, like, PFAs, the true priority free agents. I think that if you are Taylor Elgersma or you're Curtis Rourke, I think you're just as happy to go PFA as you are round 7. You might get more money. You get to pick your situation. And again, I think it's tough for an NFL GM, even in round 7, to stamp their name on a guy who's never really played 4-down football, doesn't have any measurables, or on the flip side, somebody who just, yes, had a very good season at Indiana, but had multiple serious health issues, one of which is still not fully rectified. That's not Curtis Rourke's fault at all, but it's also true.
You heard it here first, folks. John Hodge hates Canadian quarterbacks.
I was thinking the same thing.
It's just the truth. Yep. You can send him all your complaints and criticisms. Dunk and I are absolved of all guilt. This is Hodge on his own.
Having worked with Justin Dunk for 9 years, I think it's impossible to hate Canadian quarterbacks. I think it's also impossible, however, to not be at least slightly annoyed about Canadian quarterbacks, to put it that way.
On the UDFA front, I think there's a couple other names that could get potential contract offers after the draft, though I don't think it's as robust a market as it has been in years past. I think from the U Sports perspective, does Darian Newell from Queens get a look at defensive tackle? I love him. Devin Verisuk, the linebacker from Windsor, you know, has off the charts testing numbers. I think he could potentially get a look, although I think teams will be a little bit more tentative in terms of what they see on film with him. And then you've got a number of these sort of quote unquote pseudo Canadians that have played in the NCAA at a high level and could potentially get interest, right? Connor Shea at Wyoming seems the likeliest to me. He's a guy we've discussed as a potential first overall pick in the CFL. He tested really well and played some excellent football last year at Wyoming. Tiger Shanks potentially at UNLV, the offensive tackle. I think there are flaws to his game, but he's a five-year starter at an FBS program. And Hayden Harris, the defensive end for Montana as well, has had a ton of production and tested reasonably well. Maybe an outside shot for somebody like a Paris Shand or a Damian Alford if you're betting just on traits. But I would put the over-under on those guys at maybe one or two this year, one and a half, similar to what Hodge had for the drafted guys. Normally, we see a little bit more than that getting signed. I don't think it's as strong a top-end market this year in particular.
Wait, you don't think that Paris Shand is going to sign?
I don't. I don't see it.
Really?
He's basically got good traits,
everybody I've talked to. He played at LSU. He's got crazy length. He's got.
Didn't his former coach just get hired by the Saints?
He sucks. This is my Paris Shand take.
Wow.
He sucks. He's got the traits. He's not a good football player.
He started nine games at LSU.
I don't see it.
I like that I got accused of being a hater 90 seconds ago because I didn't think a guy was going to get drafted. And now you're sitting here saying that guys who start for LSU suck.
Okay.
Not that you're not high on him. You think he sucks.
In fairness, I'm being harsh for effect. He has value and he's going to be in the top five of my defensive lineman rankings for the CFL draft. I just don't see him as a clean NFL projection. He's limited to playing inside only, based on what he shows on film. That's where he's played at LSU, but he's not big enough to do that at the NFL. He's 268 pounds.
I'm not suggesting that he's going to be rushing off the edge for the Cleveland Browns opposite Myles Garrett, but at 6'4" and 270 pounds running 4.82 with 34 inch arms, you don't think he gets signed as a guy who started nine games at LSU? You don't think he gets signed by an NFL team?
I think he gets into a mini camp.
I don't think it's time to call an intervention because JC is on crack.
He's weak.
So you
at
guys
the point
know
of
his
attack.
Coach, Bo Davis, was the LSU defensive line coach, just got hired for the same position with the New Orleans Saints.
Maybe he goes to the Saints, but I just don't see it. I don't see it as an NFL
lineman.
Let
me be the first one to read my letter to JC. Dear JC, your addiction has taken a negative effect on the podcast, and it has hurt my feelings, and also Paris Shan's feelings. I don't want to speak for him, but I feel like
would JC tell Paris Shan that he sucks to his face?
If Paris Shan signs an NFL contract. And I hope he does for his sake.
Twinkie on the podcast.
Well,
don't reward him.
I eat a Twinkie anyway.
Oh, sorry. Okay,
that's you who would be a punishment.
You have to eat kale.
Does kale come in heads? I don't know if I've ever seen it whole.
I don't know. Justin would
not
know.
Not really. It's more like leaves. Kale leaves.
Okay. I will eat a raw onion. How about that? On the pod.
A raw onion. Wow, this guy's leveling up. If Paris Shand signs an NFL contract,
that's where
JC's eating a whole raw onion.
I love this
podcast
because it's going to be good pod. And also, I'm far enough away that I won't be able to smell his stanky onion breath. Because Paris Shand is signing an NFL contract. 100%.
a lot of these names that JC just went through, and you know, even Paris Shand, have relevance as well in the 2025 Canadian Football League draft, which takes place on Tuesday, April 29th, with 72 picks across 8 rounds. With Three Down Nation's position rankings coming out, where are the areas of strength in this class, and who might fans be sleeping on?
The positions of strength undoubtedly are the D-line and the DBs. When you talk to people around the league, those are positions where, I mean, and also they're positions that a lot of teams need, right? Every team in the CFL needs DBs. Everybody needs D-linemen to at least some extent. Apparently nobody needs Paris Shand because JC thinks he sucks. But those are the two positions that I think are deepest. And in a way, bizarrely, I think that the depth of those two positions could hurt the draft stock of some of those players. And the reason I say that is because if you want an offensive lineman in this draft, the number one consensus guy, I think by far, is Christopher Fortin out of UConn. So if you don't get him, everybody after him, I mean, Fortin arguably has warts. Everybody after him absolutely has warts at the offensive line position. So if you are in a position to draft Fortin, even if you really need a DB, even if you really need a D lineman, you'd be wise to wait until round two, round three, because there's still going to be some really good D linemen, some really good DBs, guys who are absolutely going to make your team and develop potentially into key special teamers, even starters in those rounds. Offensive line, you're already looking at projects pretty quickly after Fortin goes away. So receiver is thin. That helps the top receivers, Keelan White, Damian Alford, I think certainly the top two. Ethan Jordan, I think, has upside. There's some other receivers in the mix, but those top two guys, I think, are the only ones who are easy projections as CFL starters. The running back group, there are some good ones, but it is not overall a strong position. And I think linebacker, similar. Connor Shea, certainly the number one guy. Devin Verisuck out of Windsor, who JC mentioned in the last segment. Some amazing athleticism, but some scouts don't necessarily see it on film. And then Jalen Smith, ton of production, really versatile guy out of North Texas, which has a wonderful music program, by the way. But he is somebody who is a little bit undersized, 5'11", 230 pounds. What is he in the CFL, right? Is he a Mike? Is he a Sam? He played some slot corner for the Mean Green. He rushed off the edge, but is he going to rush off the edge in the CFL at 5'11" and 230 pounds? I'm sure JC thinks he could do it better than Paris Shand. But to me, and I think CFL talent evaluators who know more about this stuff than I do, I just listen to them, I think that is a question. So to me, it is a D-line and DB draft, and you're in really good luck if you're in need of those positions, if you're a CFL team. Outside of that, you got to pick your spot. So I think in the first round of the draft, you're going to see a lot of guys at other positions fly off the board, because everybody knows they can get their D lineman and they can get their DB in round two or even round three.
You hit it right on the head there with the positions of strength and positions of weakness in this draft, Hodge. But I do want to say, as an overarching class, like, this is not a bad draft class. I think sometimes fans might be less excited about it because it lacks the same caliber of high-end NFL names that we've had in the last couple of years, right? We've had a stretch where we're getting four or five guys drafted as Canadians every year, with another handful getting signed to contracts. And so that looks really sexy when you're doing your draft rankings. But you're ultimately going to have to wait on a number of those guys, and maybe the depth is not as strong past them. I think this is a draft where if you're picking in round two, round three, round four, you're going to get an exceptional player who's going to be available to you right away, and there are lots of contributors there. It's not necessarily elite at the top end, but it's really thick and solid in the middle, which ultimately I think will make for a better draft in the long run when we look back on these players at the ends of their careers and see how it all shook out.
Quarterback, quarterback, quarterback. It's the strongest quarterback class ever, according to multiple general managers that we asked during the CFL Combine. That, to me, is one of the positions of strength, surprise, surprise, but it actually really is, and it's rare that we can say that. We talked a bunch about Curtis Rourke and Taylor Elgersma already. There are two other legitimate prospects that I believe, and also talking to talent evaluators, that they believe could have upside in the Canadian Football League. That would be Jonathan Senecal from the University of Montreal, who won a Vanier Cup and a Crichton Award there in 2023. The other is Arnaud Desjardins from Laval University, who, oh, by the way, has multiple Vanier Cup rings and beat Elgersma head-to-head in the 2024 Vanier Cup and has dueled a whole bunch of times with Senecal in that great rivalry between the Quetabet and Rouge Or. I think those are a legitimate four quarterback prospects in this draft. And I'm really intrigued to see, especially where Senecal and Desjardins go. There seems to be varying opinions on both of them, both high and low, in terms of where scouts are projecting their ceilings, let's say, in the Canadian Football League. But I'm really lasered in on those two because it seems like Rourke and Elgersma are going to be in the NFL at least through training camp, and probably, I hate usually doing this giving out timelines, but it's most likely they'll be in the NFL or waiting on the NFL for at least a year.
I think that's the most interesting story of the draft is where do the quarterbacks go? And with all due respect to Arnaud Desjardins, Jonathan Senecal, they don't figure into the first few rounds of the draft. Mm-hmm. Elgersma and Rourke absolutely do. Everybody I've talked to feels like they'll be gone by the end of round two. Obviously, that could change on Friday, Saturday, depending on what happens at the NFL draft. But nobody would be surprised if they went round one. And if you're a CFL team, right, who really wants a quarterback and a D lineman, let's say, in this draft, or you really want a quarterback and a DB, why on earth would you take your favorite D lineman in round one when you're going to get a really good one in round two and risk the quarterbacks being all gone? So I think that is what could push the quarterbacks into the first round. Historically, you don't take a guy in the first round if he's got an NFL contract. It has happened before. It happened with Ryan Hunter a number of years ago and the Toronto Argonauts took him. It happened last year when the Saskatchewan Roughriders took Kyle Hergel out of Boston College, who had a UDFA deal with the New Orleans Saints. But I think that it could happen this year with the quarterbacks. I wouldn't be shocked if the quarterbacks went round two, but nobody I've talked to in the league would be surprised if the quarterbacks went round one.
A couple of names that I think could be considered sleepers, and we've talked ad nauseum about a lot of these top prospects as we've gone through the combine and the mock drafts and all of the things in the pre-draft process. And you can check out our draft rankings on Three Down Nation for in-depth analysis there. But three guys missed the combine because of various injuries who I think are going to be solid to top-end prospects. Two from UBC, tight end Skylar Griffith, who is probably the best special teams player in this draft, and Gavin Cokes, their center, who is an excellent offensive lineman. I think he's right at the back end of that top tier of offensive linemen in this draft. And then Saskatchewan receiver Rhett Vavra, who, you know, has seen his production decline a little bit over the last couple of years, battled injuries last season, but at his peak, he's just so sleek and smooth and has made some absolutely absurd catches. I know you've called a bunch of those games, Duncan. You've seen what he can do. I don't think people are talking about them enough just because they've been off the radar and they haven't been ready to test or compete yet in this stage. But I think all three of those guys will get selected higher than most people might expect.
Rhett the Jet, man, he can go. And Gavin Cokes, he could be a great value pick. There were NFL scouts that were noticing him when they were watching film for Giovanni Manu and Theo Benedet. He doesn't have the measurables, obviously, to go to the NFL, but I think he could be a really good CFL center.
I'll throw in one, too, since you guys did. Anton Hay, defensive back out of Laval, somebody who tested well at the combine, super cut up at 6 foot, 200 pounds. I think his lack of production holds him back a little bit. He did not play a huge amount on defense for the Rouge Or, but in around 20 collegiate games, this is a guy who blocked 5 kicks and I think could be an absolute special teams demon. And I know that a lot of CFL fans aren't super interested in, you know, rounds 3 and beyond in the draft, or you know, they want the starting receiver. They want to talk about the future ratio breaking pass rusher. But guess what? Three down football, special teams matters a tremendous amount. It actually is a third phase of the game, unlike the NFL and NCAA, where it's kind of forgotten. Anton Hay, if he gets on your roster, is a guy who can change the dynamic for you on special teams. We've seen Grey Cups won on blocked kicks before. I'm not suggesting Anton Hay is going to do that. But if you're looking for a guy who's likely to be available in round three, maybe round four, who you want your team to take, in my opinion, a guy like Anton Hay, a true special teams demon, is a good one to keep an eye on.
Don't get it twisted, man. Starters can come out of those later rounds. You know, Keen Schaefer Baker,
they do.
Fourth round pick. Stavros Katsantonis, what round was he selected in?
He's a fifth, I think.
That's what I'm saying. Like, there's talent out there. You just got to get the opportunity and make the most
of it. Yes, but also having Canadians who are great football players, but not necessarily starters, can be the difference come playoff time, right? Mm-hmm. Like,
look at Robbie Smith blocking a field goal in the Grey Cup.
That's exactly what I'm talking about. If you have a dominant special teams player or a handful of dominant special teams players, that can make all the difference. And I think Anton Hay has the potential to be that type of player in the CFL.
Dunk, Hamilton Tiger Cats quarterback Bo Levi Mitchell told you that he can envision retiring if the team wins a Grey Cup in 2025, stating, quote, "I see it every day," close quote. Are you surprised that Bo Levi isn't more focused on chasing records and padding his stats after the 5,000-yard season he had last year?
I was a little bit, but then he referenced Henry Burris rightfully that won and walked off into the sunset, and Ricky Ray as well, who technically did beat him but then suffered an injury the next season and didn't really play after that. So I understand where he was coming from. And then he also talked about how he had written down on paper his path to potentially passing Anthony Calvillo, but he's reassessed that record chase, as you alluded to, because of some of the recent injuries. And then I think also because he's in a great position with how much upside, you know, TSN, Bell Media, or whoever else might come along here in terms of the CFL broadcast rights, what he can do in front of the camera, that there are options there for Bo Levi Mitchell. I'm sure there's, you know, stuff even outside of football with how successful he's been. So I felt like it was revealing from Bo Levi Mitchell that he's at least thinking about this, because you look at all major pro sports, and usually when players start to think about it, they're telling you that they know that the end is near. That doesn't necessarily mean that he's not going to continue to play at a high level, but he's considering it. I mean, Trevor Harris has been very open about going through a year-to-year process at this point. Now, he's older than Bo Levi Mitchell, but doesn't have as many starts under his belt as Bo Levi Mitchell does in the Canadian Football League. So there's different ways to look at their age. But yes, to answer your question, I was a little bit surprised, but then when he explained it, it made a lot of sense. If he wins a Grey Cup in Hamilton to break the longest drought in the CFL, it's been since 1999, and walks off into the sunset, you leave that exquisite taste in fans' mouths, not just Ticats fans, but everybody. The last time they saw you was hoisting that trophy. And I think if you ask Henry Burris, he's probably happy that he did it that way instead of playing until the wheels fell off.
And when we talk about leaving people with an exquisite taste in their mouth, I assume we're not talking about a raw onion.
Hell no. We're talking about a Michelin type meal.
I can't wait for JC to be noshing on onion next week while we're chopping up the CFL draft. You're not sauteing this bad boy either. I want raw,
straight up, no sauce.
Biggest, nastiest onion you can find. I want the skin. I want to see roots, the whole shebang. It's going to be great pod.
Oh, man. I'm excited. I don't think it's going to happen, but I'm going to bring the onion regardless.
Oh, you def be onion packing, as the kids would say, because it is happening. It is happening. Paris Shand is signing an NFL deal.
Hey, are you going to eat your onion if you're wrong?
Is this Why the heck would I agree to that?
So Hodge has no consequences, as he doesn't stand on his convictions. But I am willing to put my onion where my mouth is.
I think that this is a lesson in negotiation. If you wanted me to have consequences, you have to have that written into the deal, my friend. No,
fair enough.
I'm not eating an onion, but I also will not be wrong. You will be wrong, and you will be onion noshing all day long on this pod next week. I encourage our listeners, our viewers to tune in. It's now time for Hodges Heritage Moment. On this day in 2020, Abbotsford native Chase Claypool and Ottawa native Neville Gallimore were selected in the NFL draft. Claypool went round 2 to the Pittsburgh Steelers, while Gallimore went round 3 to the Dallas Cowboys. Claypool had been named Notre Dame's MVP the year before and had an amazing rookie season, though his NFL career has since hit the skids. He's now a free agent. Gallimore, meanwhile, was a starter year one with the Cowboys, but some injuries limited him. He's now become a bit of a journeyman now with the Colts. My question for you guys, after their rookie seasons, could you ever have imagined Claypool and Gallimore not being necessarily on the outside looking in, but maybe not panning out as well as we thought after their first years?
You would have thought their positions would have been flipped. That Claypool mm-hmm. would still be under contract and Gallimore could potentially be a free agent. But that's what I'm talking about with the CFL draft and going late. You just need the opportunity. You know, Chase Claypool did the most with his as a rookie, but wasn't able to continue it. Where Gallimore, I feel like after he got through those injury issues, has been more consistent.
He definitely has. And I think he's risen to not quite the type of player we expected coming out, but certainly a guy who's a competent rotational guy in the NFL. And Chase Claypool is, as we know, on the outside looking in. It ultimately comes down to what you do with your opportunity as much as it is the talent that you have going in. And unfortunately, Claypool, for whatever reason, hasn't been able to maximize his opportunity, I think mostly from a mental standpoint.
Let's go to the three-minute drill. Two notable CFL players have announced their retirement in Montreal kicker David Côté and Ottawa running back Devontae Williams. Which one of those surprised you more?
Definitely Côté, right? Kickers can play till they're like 45. This guy is like 28 years old, but he's done. Kudos to both of them on whatever's next. Canada's men's national football team played their first game in 14 years last weekend, demolishing Italy 56-0 in an international friendly. Was that cool to see?
It was. I was happy for guys like Chris Merchant and Michael O'Connor to get back on the field. But I got to say, Team Canada, why are you sending a punt block when you're up by 40 against a bunch of Italian backups? That felt like it wasn't quite the international friendly vibe to me. I don't know that I felt the true pride of the Maple Leaf on that occasion. Former Saskatchewan Roughriders offensive tackle Trevor Reed has been waived by the Minnesota Vikings. Does that mean he's headed back to the CFL, Don?
Not immediately. He did work out for some other NFL teams, but if he does come back north, the Saskatchewan Roughriders hold his CFL rights through 2025, I believe it was. Former CFL first-round pick and current University of Guelph coach Donovan Carter will be one of 9 participants in this year's Diversity in Football internship program. Is it nice to see him get an opportunity in the league?
Absolutely. Carter has a ton of experience coaching at the collegiate level, and he played in the CFL for, I think it was 7 years, former first-round pick. Very nice to see him get the shot. The 2025 CFL Global Draft takes place on Tuesday morning prior to the start of the Canadian selections. JC, as this program's fiercest defender, who smells like onions, give us one player we should care about.
Richard Jabouner out of Nigeria. Richard Jabouner out of Nigeria. He's an undersized outside linebacker defensive end from Troy. First team all Sun Belt on 2 occasions, a couple of second teams and third teams in there as well. The only reason he's not in the NFL is because he's undersized. He's perfectly built for the CFL game. I think he could be a legit starter on the outside in the CFL. He is that good as a pass rusher. Edmonton Elks DB Tyrell Ford said he turned down multiple NFL offers to return to the CFL this year. What does that say about the quality of the league?
It says when you get that hard money in the Canadian Football League, $230,000, you got to take it, man. Reset that defensive back market. But also, you know, let's not get it twisted. There are superstars in the Canadian Football League. The Calgary Stampeders have added former Canadian receiver Colton Hunchak to their coaching staff after he announced his retirement. Do you like the move, Hodge?
I do. Hunchak was a guy who was able to get separation in the CFL despite having very lackluster measurables. He did it based on craftiness. He did it based on film study. He's somebody who I know had a very close relationship with Levi Mitchell watching film together. So I think this is a good and natural transition for Hunchak. The BC Lions have signed former NFL second round draft pick Kamoko Touré. Is he an interesting addition?
He is. I mean, this is a guy who was an elite pass rusher coming out of college and just ran into injury issues in the NFL that ultimately ended his career. I'm a little tentative because he was ultimately cut by the UFL recently, but I think there's definite upside when you bring in a player of this caliber. Dunk, Rough Riders quarterback Trevor Harris told you he is interested in calling games for TSN in the future. Do you think he'd be great in the booth?
I really do, man, especially being around him more last year in Saskatchewan doing the pregame and postgame shows with Harvard Media and 620 CKRM. He's super articulate and he wants to really take your question in so he can give you a proper answer that correlates with it. I think he would be great, and it's beneficial for TSN or whoever comes along after 2026 that Bolivar Mitchell has some upside here, and I think Trevor Harris and some others in the league currently do as well. Austin Mack and Tyson Philpott believe the Alouettes could have four, count them, four 1,000-yard receivers in 2025, something that has only happened four times in CFL history. Is that actually possible?
Well, to me, the really interesting part of these interviews was, especially Philpott, basically calling out Cody Fajardo's lack of arm strength, right? Basically saying, hey, the playbook is going to be open now with Davis Alexander back there. So maybe it's possible. Jason Moss did it once as the offensive coordinator in Ottawa. We all know he loves to throw the ball. So maybe it's possible in Montreal. We'll see. Jalen Philpott said the addition of quarterback Vernon Adams Jr. was 95% of the reason he chose to re-sign in Calgary, calling him, quote, pissed off and motivated, close quote. Is he right to be excited?
He is right to be excited. VA is an elite quarterback in this league, no matter what anybody says, and a motivated VA is even better. I think he can take Philpott to new heights next season. Hamilton Tiger Cats receiver Tim White compared his playmaking ability to Jerry Rice or Randy Moss. Is he out to lunch?
You know, I think a little bit, but I understood where he was coming from here because he was talking about, you know, being able to catch a football and take it 70 yards to the house. Now, let's not get this twisted. Randy Moss and Jerry Rice are in an elite tier. I'm not even just talking about NFL, but like pro football history. And I think Tim White is a great athlete. But, you know, that article came out and there was some chatter online. I'm just saying what the fans were saying. Tim White needs to catch the football more consistently. I like the confidence. And if he does catch the football more consistently, perhaps he can put up similar stats to what Rice and Moss put up in the NFL, in the CFL, even though he has been highly productive in the Canadian Football League.
But thank you, as always, for listening to the Three Down Nation podcast. We apologize for the lack of an episode last week, but we are now caught up for this week. And next week, we'll be chopping it up, JC and myself, on Wednesday. Dunk, you're obviously welcome for the Onion Fest, but it's going to be a draft special because, of course, the evening of Tuesday will be the CFL draft. So we'll be chopping up all of that. And then guess what? Rookie camp opens right smack dab after that. 2025 is upon us. We have a commissioner. Two teams still don't have presidents, which feels weird. But Three Down Nation has presidents, and we're here on the pod. So join us next week. We'll have a grand old time.
Want to keep your personal number private but still stay connected? With Line 2, you can get a second phone line right on your device with a super simple app and no need for another phone. Whether it's for online shopping, dating, or shielding your main number from spam, Line 2 is an easy way to manage it all. Ready for peace of mind without breaking the bank? Call, text, block, and more for only $9.99. Get started with line2.com/audio or download Line 2 in any app store today. Line 2, your second line simplified.